Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien. Welcome. We're back. Is this part five?
Part five of the Prime Directive.
Are you ready for more Prime Directive? Because we have to have more than we can handle.
Yeah, it's there's so much Prime Directive, it's scary. But today is another milestone, not just that we're doing concluding a five-part series. We have turned 3 years old.
Mammy!
we've passed the terrible twos.
Yes, we have. We've been weaned off the breast.
I don't want to be weaned.
You have to be weaned.
I don't know. That kid in Game of Thrones was still...
Yeah, that was kind of gross. It's so disturbing.
But yeah, we're 3 years old. 3 years for everyone who's been with us for 3 years. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible podcasting journey of Star Trek.
Yeah, man, it doesn't seem like 3 years, but you know, when you look back, you're like, well, that's a long time that we've been doing this.
Yeah, it both feels like a long time and like I can't believe it's been three whole years. It blows my mind. It's pretty crazy. And you know, it means it's been 3 years since I've been to PAX East, because the last time I was at PAX East is where I recorded the very first audio for the show. I was interviewing people at the con about Leonard Nimoy and about the Structure Beam game, Star Trek Timelines. So
right.
So that was the very first audio that was ever recorded was at that convention, so it was really cool getting in out there. It's like, yeah, I'm doing a podcast. You can't listen to it now because I've done nothing with it yet, but this is the first audio. It's coming.
Yeah, so 3 years old. Well, happy birthday, Dave.
Happy birthday, Aaron. Speaking of three, Zachary Quinto has reported that there are three Star Trek scripts in development. There's the Quentin Tarantino script that has been blowing up all over the internet about, oh my god, Quentin Tarantino is doing a Star Trek.
Yes.
Apparently, Simon Pegg and Doug Jung are also working on a script, the two guys behind Star Trek Beyond, which I'm really excited about because Beyond was probably my favorite of the three Kelvin films.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome. So, and they seem to get the right like feeling for Star Trek. So.
Oh yeah, it felt so much like Star Trek, which is what I really loved about it. So, I'm interested to see what they do. And then apparently there's other people working on a Star Trek script that he didn't name. But, okay. And that's interesting. Three scripts in development. And I think I saw from another source that the Quentin Tarantino one might not actually be Star Trek IV, that it might be its own thing.
Okay,
I don't know if that means a spinoff or if it's going to be next gen, because he did talk about wanting to do like a Yesterday's Enterprise type movie. I don't know. I have not heard any leaks about what the actual script is going to be like, so.
Right. It's all interesting. Obviously, you got to see what gets approved by the studio.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. And if there's like two Star Trek movies being worked on simultaneously, that would be extremely fascinating. And if, you know, they're also doing... You know, because there's also that rumor that Viacom might be re-merging.
Exactly.
So Paramount and CBS might be under the same umbrella again, maybe. So
yeah,
that could mean nothing but good things for Star Trek, I would hope.
Yeah, two houses combined.
Yeah, we don't have to get sent over to dad's for the movies and then to go back to mom's for the TV show. It'll be under one roof, so that'll be nice.
And every time we have an argument, we choose sides.
Maybe they'll reintegrate the timeline. Who knows?
It'd be cool. It'd be cool to see how that all works out.
Yes. Yeah, so we have an email, and we wanted to look at this up front today because it's about the Prime Directive. And since we're closing out the Prime Directive, we should definitely bring it up now. So this is from Samara. She's a new listener. We started talking recently. She responded to one of the earlier Prime Directive things. And she said she attached for us a short compilation of some how-to TOS on violating the Prime Directive. I thought you might find it amusing.
I would be.
So it's like a breakout chart where you've got like the middle, and then it breaks up to left or right for yes or no, and there's things underneath it. So I'll read what's in the middle first. It says, when is it okay to violate the Prime Directive, or how to break bad? And it says, will your decision serve the greater good? And it goes yes or no. And then underneath it says greater good is defined as interests of the United Federation of Planets and or Starfleet.
It's always a yes. You can break it then.
Yes.
As we've seen.
So yes is a, the first thing under yes is it a time of the essence security thing? Contact with a non-warp civilization, take all steps you deem necessary, including kidnapping a woman and child and going for compliance. TOS yesterday's child. And then the next one under yes is do you need to study a small village and gather data on their amazing regenerative capabilities? Create a cloaked facility and crouch it in the landscape. Star Trek Insurrection. Yep, absolutely. And that went great. Yep,
that worked well for everybody.
Everyone involved. And the next one is, has a psychotic space collective gone back in time to obliterate each race? Obliterate them first contact. Mm. Yes, those are the greater goods when you're trying to... So the no section... is, are you dealing with a psychotic sentient life form? Eliminate with prejudice, Voyager revulsion.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and the next one I know is, do you feel like you have a chance of convincing the other side that they're wrong while pointing a weapon at them? Ambush is duly authorized, DS9 the Siege. Yep, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And did a member of your crew previously violate the Prime Directive in order to create a friendship with a member of a primitive species behind your back? And would it now give you an ulcer if you did not save this poor friend and the entire planet from geological catastrophe beyond her species control? Indulge your savior complex and avoid Dr. Crusher at all costs. Pen pals. But as we learned, that was a Pulaski episode, unfortunately.
That was a Pulaski episode, yeah.
No. But yeah, that's a good little breakdown for when is it okay and when is it not.
I know. I wonder if they have that in the captain's ready room.
Oh, yeah. And Naomi Wildman apparently has memorized all 47 of the sub-directives of the Prime Directive, but, you know, we still don't know what they are. So thanks, Naomi, for not telling us.
Yeah. That's great. That's awesome. Yeah, thank you for that. That's fun to it's fun to try to figure out the mechanics of this Prime Directive, because it's obviously these captains play fast and loose.
They do play fast and loose, and like you said, I think on our first episode, going through the Prime Directive like episode by episode and looking at examples, I think is going to be helpful going forward for when we find other episodes that break the Prime Directive. It's like, yep, that's a break, or that's, you know, questionable.
Right. Well, should we go into our Prime Directive Part 5?
Yes. Voyager? Yes, we ended up with Threshold last week because you never want to not end on Threshold.
Yes, Threshold is always an enjoyable episode.
The thorn in the side of all Star Trek fans. Or probably. Pretty,
I just
if
I just
anyone out there, if that's your favorite episode, I want to meet you. Tell me. I want to talk to you. I want to pick your brain about why this is your favorite episode.
We will drive out to Kansas City just to have a conversation with you and have a cult deprogramming thing going on with you.
I'll bring my recorder. We'll pray away the gay. pray away the threshold. Sorry.
The threshold. Right. Yes. This can't be. You can't do this.
You know, I didn't mean that as a gay is bad. It just way to get away at the threshold. So just
yes,
just for everyone else out there, it was not meant to be a derogatory joke. I apologize.
Yes. Anyway, so Dave says crazy shit all the time. So
it's what happens when I'm in pain.
I'm in pain. I need my pain.
I need my pain to say crazy things.
In case you didn't know, Dave is still dealing with a fractured leg.
Yes, those don't heal overnight, unfortunately.
Oh, they don't. So that's he's still dealing with doctors never giving him any pain medication because, you know.
Or
why would you?
Every single time I go to a doctor, they're like, oh, look, it's going to take longer. And then here, try a different knee brace. I'm like, why didn't you give me this one the first time? Please.
Yeah, exactly.
Please stop telling me different things every time I come see you guys.
So after we got done with Thresholds, we are going on to the next episode, which is Innocence.
Innocence!
Yes, Innocence is a episode where Tuvok is trapped on a moon with some alien, annoying alien children. And
that end up being elderly people. Yes, Benjamin Buttons.
Right, and that the creature is slowly hunting them all and disappearing, making them disappear. So as for a Prime Directive break, you put on this that you think this is mixed. I wonder what your reasoning on that is.
I said mixed because shuttlecraft accident.
It's not his fault that
he didn't, you know, interfere with this place on purpose. Right. Voyager has a shuttlecraft issue. Apparently none of them work right until they build their own Delta Flyer.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So he's there, not on purpose. He's doing, I guess, what he thinks is the responsible thing with, you know, trying to protect a bunch of crying children. he doesn't know he's interfering with their death ritual, and they all end up dying anyway, the way they're meant to. So, like, no harm, no foul?
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess.
I mean, like, it doesn't impact their culture at all, really. I mean, they took a little extra time to die. boo hoo? I mean, that's why I say mixed, because, like, you know, like, it doesn't contaminate their culture on a long standing thing. They didn't kill the monster that takes away the children. You know, nothing beyond the slight impact of them delaying some of their deaths did it do anything to the culture. Because, I mean, like, the people just put their elderly there to die. So, I mean,
Right.
It's barely a culture anymore. You know what I mean? That's where they go to die. And he was just trying to protect them because he thought there was a predator on this weird moon. I mean, what are you going to do?
Right. You know, this funny thing is when you go to the Memory Alpha, this page, there's actually no reference to the Prime Directive on this, although it is cited as a Prime Directive episode.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
And they are spacefaring, even though they're an insular society. They don't really like to talk to, as you know, they pretty much point out, they don't like to talk to outside people. You know, it's kind of they are a spacefaring society.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, they're not, like I said, I don't think any actual contamination happened.
Right. Right.
So I mean,
they're going to die anyways, unless there's some way they will survive and bring, you know, different ideas to light. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I say, you know, cause I mean, sure, he interfered with somebody. He was there, but he wasn't sticking his nose in people's business on purpose. So that's why I say it's mixed, because he was there on accident. They looked helpless. So he was doing what a responsible Starfleet officer would do when helpless people are around. You defend the innocent.
It's one of the biggest issues that the Prime Directives have, is that, you know, over and over again, and especially we see in a lot of Next Gen and TOS, is that, you know, they accidentally run into people and they don't mean to interfere with the society, but just by them bumping into each other, they violate the Prime Directive, you know.
So would you call this mixed or not?
Yeah, I would call it a mix. It's not necessarily it's not a, you know, in your face, as we will see later on, break of the Prime Directive, but it is definitely a, you know, there are some issues here.
Oh, there will be in your face ones.
Oh, yes. All over your face.
Neck and chest. Neck and chest. Voyager. And thank you, Robbie. I hope you're listening.
the next one we have on the list is False Prophets. This is one of your more favorite episodes.
Yeah, I'm saying yes, they broke the Prime Directive on this because they interfered with what the Ferengi were doing.
Right. And we saw this in the beginning of we talked about this slightly in like two episodes ago or three episodes ago about the next generation. Yeah. Next generation, the price, where we see the Ferengis get transported into the Delta Quadrant.
And then the wormhole closes and no one gets to buy it anyway.
That's right. And so this one is a definite yes. Dave, what do you think Janeway and crew could have done a little differently?
Leave them alone.
Leave the Ferengi alone.
Leave the Ferengi in peace. They're just doing what they think is best and, you know, making some profit on the side. And they're making the culture better. Who knows? I mean, the Ferengi aren't bounded by the Prime Directive. So,
not yet. Well, at this point, are they? No. Because, yeah. Because they do join later on, but...
Yeah, but that's still... We're still, like, mid, season 5 or 6 of Deep Space Nine at this point.
Right, so it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet. Because I think it doesn't happen until, like, the very last episode of Deep Space Nine, where they kind of just, like, here, all this stuff happened, and they lived happily ever after.
Right, gotcha.
So, yeah, because, I mean, she had Neelix impersonate a Grand Nagus...
Mm-hmm.
I'm like she's like shitting all over the Ferengi culture. I mean, like, sure, Neelix might be the goofball of the Delta Quadrant, but I mean that's just low. Like having him, he wasn't a Grand Nagus, he was a Grand something, but it was like a Nagus assistant or something, and that was just low.
The Grand Proxy,
yeah, the Grand Proxy. So,
which is representative of the Grand Nagus.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like Janeway messed with the Ferengi.
Yeah,
that's my take on it. They've been there for years,
right?
And you know, it wasn't the Federation's fault. It was the Ferengi's fault they were there. I don't know. I guess you could argue that they're trying to give the culture back their regular way of life. But I mean, I can't see how they would be impacting the entire planet. They'd be impacting like a province or continent at most.
Right. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Like this, the rest of the planet, the public doesn't even know they're there.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's just Janeway getting pissed off at Ferengi.
Yeah, just
they don't deserve to be there.
They don't deserve it. I don't know. It just seemed strange to me that they would bring it up, and I think Janeway's in the wrong. But you know,
this is how you feel.
Yeah. Right, but how about you?
I'm willing to agree with that. I mean, Ferengi are kind of gross to me, but I think that you're right. I mean, it wasn't their fault. Well. Kind of was their fault that they got trapped in there because they were being kind of hardheads.
Oh, yeah. It was their fault they got trapped, but it wasn't Starfleet's fault they got trapped.
Right. And then after that, they made the best that they could do in their situation. They found a planet and they set up shop, right? So, I mean, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Just that, I guess, Janeway and crew didn't think that was worth them being there.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's a break. She's interfering with the Ferengi culture.
And again, Ferengi are not bound by the Prime Directive, and just because aliens, you know, land onto a primitive culture doesn't mean that they can't do whatever they want. I'm sure Ferengi in Ferengi space before they join the Federation has done this, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. So,
and those worlds turned out great, I'm sure.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, but. I mean, like the Ferengi economy is supposed to be really, really good.
Their economy, but we don't know anything about their economy. I mean, about primitive.
If you get Ferengis there, they'll make your economy better.
You say that, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
It'd be better. It'd be big.
It's going to be huge. Don't worry.
It's going to be huge. Don't worry. The economy is the biggest it's ever been. Look at my hands. You know, they don't lie.
Trump is like the Grand Nagus of our... of our time.
Oh man.
The next episode we have here is Flashback, which is an excellent episode, but I do not see how this has anything to do with the Prime Directive other than a mention of the Prime Directive in this.
Yeah, I think it's just a mention because I guess you could see like Sulu dicking around with the Klingons mm-hmm. being some sort of break of the Prime Directive. I don't think so.
So here's what there's a quote here that Janeway talks to Harry Kim says, space must have seemed a whole lot bigger back then. It's not surprising that they had to bend the rules a little. They were a little slower to invoke the Prime Directive and a little quicker to pull their phasers. Of course, a whole bunch of them would have been booted out of Starfleet today. But I have to admit, I would have loved to ride shotgun it with at least once with a group of officers like that. So Janeway admits she likes how they operated.
Yeah. Yeah, for the fast and loose of the Prime Directive, that's how it is. I feel like that's mostly just a reference because, I mean, since it's a Voyager episode and Voyager isn't necessarily doing anything but Janeway's writing his mind meld, so there's no actual break of the Prime Directive being done except for what they kill What's-His-Face even though he's alive at the end of Star Trek VI. So, I don't know.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Can't remember his name off the top of my head, but yeah, they can't.
Yeah, that officer. Yeah,
the bearded guy.
Yeah.
One of the very few beards you see in Star Trek from humans.
Well, besides Riker.
Yeah, but you don't see him that often, so that's why he sticks out in my head. So yeah, the bearded guy, he's alive, but they kill him in this episode for reasons? I don't know.
Well, the next one we have here on the list, so we're putting that as flashback as a no.
Yeah, I don't see how it
has no bearing on it whatsoever.
Yeah, because I mean, the events have already happened and passed. She's just watching them happen. So if any breaks that happen, that has nothing to do with her.
Right. The next episodes we have is part one and two of Future's End. I have this as a no, but they do have breaks in the temporal Prime Directive.
I wish I knew what the the temporal Prime Directive is even less clear than the regular Prime Directive.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not spelled out.
Because it's like they're like, oh, don't share your experiences. But the thing is, they have the whole time ship that supposedly is there to fix the temporal Prime. But at the same time, I mean, they're not doing a very good job of it. They let Discovery just blink out of existence for 9 months. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, it's like, shouldn't that be one of the things they noticed? And, you know, here, let's put Discovery back in where they need to go, you know, like the exact moment that they disappeared instead of, you know, it's just so weird that they've got these people patrolling the timeline and they're like, yeah, we'll let that slide.
The one thing I do have to say is because the Temporal Prime Directive is supposed to take place in the 29th century. I would think the technology would look way too like out of this world.
Yeah.
Like almost ethereal.
But they did a really cool like interior for that bridge, and it did look very different than anything we'd seen before.
This episode because we didn't see that so much. We saw it
in Relativity.
Relativity, yeah, right.
Yeah, but in Relativity, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah,
because that was a solo ship in this episode.
So the reason why I'm saying this is a no, because when we went back to First Contact for the Next Generation movie, they went back in time, you know, to save humanity from the Borg. But because they're dealing with their own species, even though that's pre-Federation, I guess that doesn't break the Prime Directive. And, you know,
they're keeping history as intact as they can.
Like right, they're really not, and we don't really know. I mean, that this guy gets the timeship that he's trying to, you know, go into the future and steal technology. We don't know that's not part of the real. We don't know if this is not a part of what's history already took place. So it might dovetail fine into what Voyager does to stop the guy from Chronoworks, the
Bill Gates type guy, yeah.
So we don't know that Henry Starling didn't get that the time ship and try to go into the future and rearrange, you know, get technology and rearrange time. We don't know that Voyager coming back and stopping him isn't already happened. It dovetails into our time stream perfectly. So.
Well, yeah, but that's still Braxton, and he had to spend like that decade on Earth. In that decade, and he was not happy about it. He brings it up later.
He does bring it up later. But the other side of it is, too, is like, you know, Braxton, you know, what's going on with your time ship? why is that Chronoworks, or is that the name of the ship? Chronoworks, yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know.
And this is the time Sarah Silverman was in Star Trek.
Yeah, this is great. It was a great episode. She's got to be very young at this point, too.
Oh, yeah.
But no, this is a temporal Prime Directive break. This has nothing to do with our Prime Directive in the 24th century.
Yeah, and it's on Earth, so they said that Prime Directive doesn't apply when it comes to humans. So, yay Riker!
Yay Riker! So the next one we have is the two-parter of Scorpion, or one-parter. Sorry, we talked about Scorpion so long ago, Dave.
Yeah, episode 10.
Episode 10. What episode are we on? Like 150 something?
Yeah, something like that.
So this is going way
back. In the high 150s, yes.
So this is a definite yes for Prime Directive break. Voyager encounters an alien race.
Oh, this will be episode 160 that comes out. I'm sorry.
Oh, 160. Nice.
Yeah, so 150 episodes ago.
Right.
We talked about Scorpion.
Wow, that is a long time ago.
150 years!
It feels crazy how long ago it was. So they discovered the species 8472, which live in fluidic space. They basically use them to fight the Borg. And try to defeat the Borg.
Well, the Borg, they run into them because the Borg sought them out because they got bored assimilating regular things. Like, hey, let's look for new things to assimilate. So they go, they find them, and they start invading our space. And then the Borg find out they can't assimilate them. Janeway makes a deal with the Borg to figure out how to help the Borg assimilate another race. So, Janeway's a terrible person.
Yeah, because it's just to be. It's because she. It works in her favor.
Yeah, it works in her favor, but because she's able to negotiate with them. But I mean, like condemning an entire race to assimilation when they were immune to it. I mean, not that they're going to get all assimilated, but potentially they can be assimilated. That's terrible.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you see what happened at Wolf 359, didn't you, Janeway?
Yeah. This is pretty, this one is like just in your face. Like she just doesn't care what's going to happen because we don't know anything about fluidic space. You know, it's just, it's a mystery. And you don't know anything about that dimension.
Nope.
And you're just like, yeah, whatever. Fuck them.
Yeah. So this is a big hard break on multiple fronts from Janeway. So can we count this as two Prime Directive breaks?
I don't know if we can count it as two, just one big break. I don't really understand why it was written this way. Like you'd think they would have figured some different way to do this.
Well, it's a double break. It's two breaks. I would like to count this as two because she's aiding the Borg. Mm-hmm. Giving them technology because they developed the technology to help them assimilate the other race, and by doing that, they've interfered with the other race too, by making them vulnerable to assimilation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So can we call that a double break?
Well, it still only counts as one. I mean, it's like
okay.
It's like I don't know.
You're like Gimli whenever Legolas like took out the elephant. It only counts as one.
It's just one terrible mistake, and I mean, it saved Voyager skin, but I mean, geez, I don't know. You're dealing with societies and cultures and two different races. And you just throwing it out, saying, "Yeah, just to save us, we'll, you know, I don't know."
It's what I'm saying. Like they've got this like anti giving other races technology, but she just gives it to the Borg,
right?
Like I mean, like and like and this, get, these and are not nice people.
Equinox, and when we get to Equinox, we see the same thing, but the tables have turned, and then Janeway gets all high and mighty.
Yep.
So,
oh, Janeway, you don't make any sense, girl.
No, so we're going to say
cray cray.
A big fat yes for Scorpion. And Scorpion is part one and two. I'm sorry, I thought it was only part one. So, but it's part one and two.
Yes,
and Future's End is part one and two as well. So, but
yeah, two parters.
The next episode we have Infinite Regress. So,
nope.
Yeah, it really isn't much to say about this.
I mean, they steal the Binculum, which makes you think of Speculum for whatever reason. It's a giant space speculum for one of those Gargamanders, but
yes, Gargamanders. Jesus,
Gargamanders. Oh my God. We'll bring those guys back just because it's a big space whale vagina thing. So the Binculum is this thing that's this alien race is planted in a destroyed Borg cube. So the Borg will come and collect it. And it's supposed to like basically give the Borg a virus and they all kind of go crazy. And it's affecting 7 of 9. And so they steal it and then they disable it so that 7 cannot go crazy. And then they beam it back out into space and they leave it for him. So, I mean, they're interfering with like a weapon against the Borg. Again, there's Janeway siding with the Borg. Kind of like
and
messing with their weapons,
and you know, Starfleet, you know, tinkered with this idea too back in Next Generation.
Yes, they did. It's a very similar idea, which is I thought was interesting. I was like, oh, that's cool. They're bringing that idea back.
Not that it
ever worked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think this is just basically it has nothing directly to do with the Prime Directive, other than like what you stated before.
I mean, this is the episode where Naomi Wildman says, I learned all 47 sub-directives of the Prime Directive while they were playing Coruscant. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll move on to the next episode is 30 Days. This is another big fat yes, but this one has a little heart to it, I suppose. I feel for Tom Paris. We see in the very beginning Tom Paris is demoted. And he basically broke all the rules to try to save a water planet that is being held together by some weird force field.
It's a cool planet. It's a cool idea.
This is a cool episode. The ideas on this episode is fantastic. It's a fascinating episode to think about a planet like that. Apparently, they find this planet where the civilization is on there. It's all water, and it goes all the way down, so they have no idea what's in the down at the center of this planet.
And you know Tom, he likes to penetrate things.
Yes, he does. And apparently Tom loves old submarine movies like 2000 Leagues Under the Sea and The Hunt for Red October. So he decides he's going to take their ship and fly down to the center and find out what's in the middle.
What's in the middle? Moana vagina. Oh no,
is it? I thought it was just a big caramel center.
It might be. That's true. It's the flying spaghetti monster.
Ah, that's wonderful. So we find out in the middle is this giant generator that's holding this planet's form, and apparently they found out. It's not really described too well, but apparently at some point that the water was all siphoned off another planet. And then they just like flew away from that other planet, or that planet was destroyed. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But that's how this planet was put there. So when they go down with the Delta Flyer, they discover this thing. But then they also discover that what this race is doing that's living on there
is... They drink their own pee.
Their oxygen refineries are somehow messing with the water system. It wasn't very clear to me on that.
Yeah,
on that aspect.
Voyager likes fudging with science and not being clear. Yeah, that's par for the course of Voyager.
It was basically kind of like, I think, global warming kind of like callback, you know, like, hey, look, man, you know, you're messing up with the environment. You got to start doing some changes. And they were like, we'll take it under consideration. And when the powers that be don't seem to care about Tom Paris's finding.
That's
Tom
a very Paris 90s message.
Tom Paris decides that he's going to go and change the course of this planet's history
by doing what he does, and you know he's
going to jail.
Yeah. Well, I get to play with the plants that way. I'm a botanist, really. I don't know how I got constrained to being a doctor, but you know, I definitely say it's a break. But he was trying to do good. He was trying to do right by the people.
He's doing his best Kirk impression at this point.
He was. Or was he doing a Nick Locarno impression?
One of the two. but it was definitely I think it was in the right place for what he was trying to do. You know, he wasn't trying to like cause harm necessarily. It's just that the idea of the Prime Directive is obviously, which he should know anyways, is that, you know, you can't interfere with that that civilization's future or the way they do things, because, you know, who are you to play God with them?
Yeah. So. Yeah. So it's definitely a break. He was trying to be noble, but it's a break. And it's like all written through like this. I like how he did the episode, though, because it's like this letter to his dad, who's the admiral.
Yeah, it was like a difficult conversation with his father that he was having and trying to understand, you know, why, or trying to have him understand why he broke all the rules. Next episode we have on the list here is the Omega Directive. This is the first time we ever hear of the Omega Directive.
And the last time.
And the last, where the Prime Directive is completely rescinded.
Because the Omega Particle could render warp drive inert across the entire galaxy.
Mm-hmm. This is
well, that's actually, no problem. Just use the spore drive.
Just use a spore drive or use fluidic space or
yeah, just whatever. Work around fluidic space. That'll work.
Hey, so this is actually a interesting episode, especially the dynamics between 7 and 9 and Janeway.
Because the Borg think it's the most perfect particle.
Yeah, 7 and 9 is completely fascinated with the Omega particle. So this civilization discovers the Omega particle. And like you said, if the Omega particle somehow becomes unstable, it could just, like you said, just
rip knock through subspace and make warp drive impossible.
And basically stopping everything that they know, which just seems pretty scary if you think about it.
It's frightening. I mean, that'll put, you know, any class civilization that uses that back down to like not even a class 1 civilization, I think.
Back to our civilization,
yeah. Side,
you know, take them, you know, centuries or thousands of years to travel to one planet. So, you know, in a different solar system. So they have to basically steal the Omega molecule and all their findings and get it off the planet. And like you said, this is you can say this is the reason they're given good reason to break the Prime Directive for this. It's definitely a fun episode to watch for sure.
I hope they kind of bring this up in another series, because I just want to see another series do the Omega particle. It'd just be interesting to see another crew's take on it, because I almost kind of want to think that Janeway made it up. She's like trying to scare her crew, because I mean, remember, she's a scientist. Maybe she just wants the Omega particle for herself so she can tinker around with it like in her underground lab like Lorca's got, you know.
A couple mentions of the Omega Directive outside of the episodes, there's the Captain James T. Kirk. The 2006 video game Star Trek Legacy brings up that after this devastating attack spreads thousands of Omega particles into a star system. So that's brought up. Also, Star Trek Armada. Video game.
They're bringing up the video games. That's interesting.
Yeah, the video game. And the game Star Trek Armada has the events of the Omega particle that the Ferengi were prepared to sell it to the Cardassians, and that the Romulans, led by Celia, captured it and hid it from the Romulan starbase where the Borg assimilated it. Another one, Section 31 novel Cloak, has the events of led to the creation of the Omega Directive. So I mean, there's definitely some different
Memory beta type stuff, though.
Exactly, memory beta shit. So you know, fun stuff. I really enjoyed Omega Directive, actually, going back to it.
Yeah, it's a fun episode.
Fun to watch. The next one we have here is Course Oblivion. This is Voyager.
I hate this episode so much.
Why do you hate it so much?
Because it leaves so many freaking questions. Like, it's so fucking stupid. I despise this episode so much, because it's all the people from the demon planet. The ship's a demon. The ship's a demon ship. All the people of the demon. Like, the entire episode follows these other characters. So this makes me go, like, how many of the episodes before this have been? Because the demon planet was at the end of the previous season. So, like, we've got a season gap. We've got, you know, a couple episodes before the end of the season after Demon. And we got, you know, I think this is, like, the 18th episode of this season. So it's deep into the season. And they're, like, they're flying back to the, because at the end of the episode, they're flying back to the demon planet trying to get back so they don't fall apart. And then they run into Voyager. What has Voyager been doing by the demon planet for so long?
I never thought about that closely. It's interesting.
They're almost back. They're getting close. They're running. The Voyager's there. Why is Voyager still there? It's been months, if not almost a year at this point. How?
Yeah, get the hell out of here.
Why are they still back there? Like, it makes me so angry. I'm just like, they're Janeway just dicks around so much. They're trying to get home, right? That's like, right. That's the point of the show. They're lost in the Delta Quadrant. They're trying to get home. But they've been sitting around the Damon planet for like 20-something episodes. And what episodes did we see since the Damon planet that weren't really the real Voyager? How many episodes were these were they the Damon Voyager people? You know what I mean? Like, it just makes me mad.
It's interesting.
Especially the fact that
I didn't put that together.
Oh, yeah?
Now, I didn't really think about that.
Now, what do you think of it?
I gotta process it. Tell you the truth, I have to think about that. I didn't really see much of what this had to do with, you know, Prime Directive.
Well, it doesn't. They're not the Voyager crew.
Yeah,
there's no bearing. They're not really the Voyager crew. They're not Federation, and they all die at the end. So, no, that's my take on it. How do you feel?
I know, it's like you said, it's not them. And I, other than just they have the similarity, you know, that they're like them, you know, other than that, I can't understand why this would be considered to be a Prime Directive break or even Prime Directive being involved with this.
Yeah.
So
you got me. If any of you guys have any ideas, let us know. We'd be happy to read about them and talk about them. But I can't for the life of me think about it. This would be a Prime Directive break.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. What you just described there with the demon planet in this episode. I didn't like connect them. Probably because I hadn't seen them back to back.
Well, when I read the description for this episode, I started watching the beginning to make sure it was the episode I was thinking of, because I remember last time I watched it, I was livid, and I thought they were in the same season, but I stopped and I looked back and it was the season before it was where they did the demon planet. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it makes it even worse that it's not even in the same season. Cause there's usually, you know, a time gap in between seasons.
Right. Exactly. Well, moving on to the next episode, we have Relativity. This is another temporal Prime Directive break, but it's not really, I don't even know if you could say a Prime Directive break. It's just mostly just that
it's all temporal.
They needed Seven of Nine's help with the issues with Voyager. This is a very fun episode to watch. I enjoyed this episode a lot.
It is a great episode.
Yeah, I like this episode. Basically, there's some temporal bomb device put onto Voyager, and it happened back when they were on their when they were constructing Voyager, and Seven of Nine is recruited by the 24th century ship.
Relativity.
What was the name of Relativity, thank you. And she's kind of like their secret agent to go through and try to find this device. And she keeps on getting stopped or something happens that she can't do it or dies.
Yeah, she dies so, at the very beginning pretty much.
But we get the return of Captain Braxton. And we find that Captain Braxton holds quite a grudge against Janeway.
Yeah,
but
there's like three separate Braxtons in this episode. At one point, they mention which is great, and Janeway's like, stop! I don't want to have a headache anymore.
I know Janeway's just like, I just don't want to even think about this.
They'll get reintegrated later.
Aren't you a scientist?
Yeah, I can see O'Brien getting a headache because O'Brien's a simple man with very simple needs.
Yes,
Janeway, you're a captain. You went to Starfleet Academy. You're not a crewman like Mr. O'Brien. You should relish this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so here we have another temporal Prime Directive episode, but it really has nothing to do with the Prime Directive. So we're going to say this is a no.
Say this is a no, though, yes.
Yeah, so, but it has the temporal Prime Directive insinuations or it has a part of that. So so we're going to move on to the next episode is Equinox Part 1 and 2. This is a big fat yes, but this is not necessarily all on Janeway. This is mostly on the crew of the Equinox.
Yeah.
Who they find are stranded out there with them. But instead of doing everything like the book, the captain of the Equinox decides that he's going to just do whatever he has to get his crew home. And by doing that, he uses the biomass of these creatures
He kills them as he needs to become fuel.
Right, to fuel the ship to make them go faster to get home to the Alpha Quadrant.
Soonerly.
Soonerly. So this is obviously...
breaking the Prime Directive, so...
But like as we said before,
I also feel like Janeway is also breaking the Prime Directive by just being like a total asshole the entire time. Like she gets the way she like tries to torture that crewman, like or put him in a place where he can die easily. I feel like that's breaking something somewhere.
It's a human rights violation, but more than anything, it's like we just said, we saw the same thing in Scorpion. Janeway used species 8472, whatever the hell they are, to combat the Borg. And those two, you know, going head to head has got to have some Prime Directive issues. And then we see the captain of the Equinox do the same thing. And then she gets all high and mighty with them.
Yeah, like it's so confusing that she is so, you know, against it when she's done so many horrible things herself. I'm just like, and there's so many things about that episode that just kind of bother me. It's like they're both trying to get home. I don't understand why they don't try to like explain what's happening instead of like them keeping it a secret just made it worse. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like them like not coming forward with it and trying to be all the subterfuge they were doing. Like, oh, we gotta get home. We're gonna leave these assholes behind. I'm just like, come on! Like, it didn't make a lot of sense that they would turn on each other so fast. I feel like they should have tried more to work together or explain what they were doing and try to justify it to the other side. I think that could have been more interesting rather than like, oh, we're just gonna go rogue.
Right. Did we talk about this before? I felt like we did.
Oh, we talked about this episode in between either right after Discovery.
Or
mid-season.
Because I remember us having a long conversation about this. I just didn't remember if it was on the podcast or off back. That's what 3 years will do to you people. So
many conversations.
Yeah, we were saying, I think, that this should have been drawn out between like 4 or 5 episodes, that the Equinox and Voyager were like, you know, working together, and this is a slow mystery that would build. That would have been really exciting.
Oh, yeah, it would have been a lot funner, more fun if they did that.
And the pain that would have hit your heart that they were trying to sabotage Voyager in the end would be even harder to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
Captain Ransom basically said that they traveled 10,000 light years in less than 2 weeks. And there was like, how could we ignore it? How could we ignore that, you know, that speed of getting home so fast? But, you know, Janeway, you know, gets up on her high horse and says, you know, it's just, that's not acceptable. And
well, she tries to integrate the crew and leave their ship behind. They're like, oh, we're not going to leave our ship behind. And that's when they start going crazy. I'm just like, why didn't they just talk more? Why didn't they just, Voyager has looked as bad or worse. Why couldn't they take some time to fix their ship too? It just, like, a lot of things just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, this was a great concept. This was a great, and even some of the, you know, the acting was wonderful. And seeing Janeway somehow unhinged by all this was interesting, too, to see her. Maybe she's seeing a reflection of herself that she was scared of.
Oh my God, what did I do to species 8472?
Well, they don't look human. They don't look very lovey-dovey, so we don't care. They don't look like little fairies.
They give you little STDs.
That's right. Like, oh, man. Back in episode 10.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, so it's interesting, but it would have been better played if this was drawn out and we got to know the crew better and all that. So
emotional oomph.
But it was still a fun episode to watch. I just don't think it marries up together as well when you put all the episodes next to each other and you analyze it like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the next episode after Equinox, we have Dragon's Teeth. Dragon's Teeth is a really great episode, fun to watch, where Voyager finds this gets sucked into this these tunnels. It doesn't make a lot of sense, to tell you the truth.
Like a warp vortex, something like that.
Yeah, and there's basically like this maze of tunnels, and there is a race that's protecting it or like keeping it to themselves, the Torelli, and they want to purge Voyager's computer. At first they just like, we want to just purge your computers of any information you got from these tunnels or this maze, subspace corridors. And Janeway says like, no way. And then they just start attacking her, and when they attack her, they escape to a planet that is going through a nuclear winter. And when they get to this planet, they set down and they find that there are life signs. And when they go down to the planet, they find the life signs, and they bring some of the people back. And these people have been basically for, 800 or 900 years have been into some kind of stasis, sleeping through this nuclear winter that they were attacked. And the race is called the Valdwar, and they...
They
basically are conquerors that use these subspace corridors until their enemies teamed up against them and destroyed their planet. And they turn against Janeway at the very end, as usual, as all Voyager.
That's how it goes.
I know.
Janeway just looks at him the wrong way. It's a quick way home, so... So every time there's a quick way home, it's got to be foiled at the last second. It's like, okay.
They didn't say they were going to get them all the way home. They just said that they were going to get them closer.
Yeah, that's better than...
They shave off 5 years. I mean, anyways.
Well, they're always shaving off like a year here, year there with different random things that happen. So, I mean...
Right. But this is a huge break because, 7-9 brings back this one scientist... And then he decides to bring the rest of his remaining people alive. And then that's when all hell breaks loose. But Janeway shouldn't try to do anything for this people. They just got to just let them be. That's why I don't understand. This episode doesn't even – I mean, I think they mention the Prime Directive, but they just don't even think about what it means, because there's no way that they should be helping these people.
Yeah. That's Janeway for you, though.
I mean, it doesn't it seem strange that all of a sudden it's like the Prime Directive is not even like really even adhered to?
Well, you know, after you know, rubbing it in Ransom's face, you gotta like lay off it a little bit, right?
I guess I can't keep talking about the Prime Directive all the time.
All the time. You gotta let it slip every now and then. And since Ransom broke it for 2 episodes, it's Janeway's turn. It's like, this is my show. I break the Prime Directive.
Yeah. I mean, although you can't blame it entirely on Janeway beginning, because 7-9 brought it back. But then Janeway decides that she's going to relocate all these people, which you can't. So it doesn't make any sense.
Which is hilarious, because this comes up again very soon.
Relocating people again. Gotcha. So anyways,
come on.
Actually, Dragon's Teeth is an excellent episode. It's definitely worth watching, but not good for Prime Directive. It's a bad example for Prime Directive. So the next episode we have on our list here is The Blink of an Eye, which we talked back on episode 114, which we titled Lightbringer, Earthshaker
Lightbringer. Oh man, that was good times. Good times. This is a great episode. You know, I don't often say that about a Voyager episode, but this is a great episode. If you haven't seen it in a while, go and watch it.
It is a fun episode.
It is a break of the Prime Directive, and I'm going to put it firmly at Janeway's feet because she's like, "Oh, look, what's that?" Instead of, "Oh, we should just keep going home."
So, which they don't realize, or maybe they realize slowly, that because time moves so much faster on their planet, when the Voyager comes into orbit onto this planet, they get stuck, but they don't realize that the people start seeing the Voyager as some kind of like God thing, or I'm not, do they really, is it a God?
At the beginning it's a God because it's a new star in the night. And then they ever since that new star showed up, the ground started shaking. And so that's why it's Lightbringer, Earthshaker.
Sure.
So they think it's a god for like, you know, hundreds of years, and they make a space program. They send somebody up, and
they do their own Apollo mission.
Then they start trying to blow it out of the sky. It's like, kill it.
Yes. Yeah. This is a fantastic episode too.
Such a great science fiction concept.
Yes, it is. But this is definitely pretty big break in Prime Directive.
Absolutely.
You can't totally say it's totally Janeway's fault.
It's totally Janeway's fault because she's got to look at something and she got the ship stuck. I mean, granted, it's not technically anyone's fault the ship got stuck, but if she would have, you know, done her job and just, let's keep going home, they wouldn't have gotten stuck. That's all I'm saying. Like, you know, when you see the mud pit on the side of the road, you want to start doing donuts and then your car gets stuck, you could have just kept going home.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. You can try to stop trying to look at all the sights. It's like you could make that trip across country really fast if you wanted, if you don't want to make too many stops. But if you're going to stop at every little like tourist site, it's going to take you weeks.
Yeah, I know they have to stop to refuel and stuff like that, but half the time they say they're stopping, they're just, "Oh, we're checking this out." It's not like, "Oh, we need supplies and, you know, this is done." I mean, sometimes they do stop and they say, "Oh, we're running out of food, or we need to get some water, we need to get some deuterium." Sometimes they do, but most of the time they stop, I would say it over half the time they stop, it's not for anything practical.
Yeah, it's like, "Oh, what is this? Let's look at this. We're scientists, we're explorers, we have to find out." It's like, "No, maybe we should get home."
It's a 75-year journey if you don't make any stops. And you've got to make gas stops because that's just how things work. You got to make gas stops, you got to do other things. But they're doing all these
bathroom breaks.
Yeah, they got to do all these other stops because they're scientists. And I'm just like theoretically, they would never get home if they stopped for everything that they looked at. You know what I mean?
They should do bathroom breaks where they have to stop on planets and a whole crew comes out and they just piss on the planet and then they leave. Who are those alien assholes? Voyager.
That would be great.
All right, so we're definitely saying that Blink of an Eye is a break from Janeway. So next one we have is Friendship One. I put this one as a yes for a lot of reasons.
Oh, it is definitely a yes for a lot of reasons.
Friendship One is a early probe from Earth.
I think they said it was launched like within like 2 or 3 years of Zed from Cochrane's original warp speed test.
That's right. So what do you say, 300 years ago? Something similar to that. I can't remember.
Here's antimatter. Here's nuclear warheads. Here's how to do it all.
Right. Yeah. So unfortunately, Friendship One trying to make contact with alien races But this is pre-Federation. This is pre-Federation Earth, so the Prime Directive does not apply to Friendship One as a probe. But Starfleet Command gives Janeway and Voyager one of their first mission in years to retrieve Friendship One because they know that Friendship One had got lost out in the Delta Quadrant and should be somewhere in the vicinity where Voyager is. So Voyager does a search. And they do find Friendship One on a planet that is going through another nuclear winter. And this time we find out the nuclear winter is caused by Friendship One. The knowledge that they that they got from Friendship One destroyed their society.
Apparently they didn't follow the schematics, right?
Well, it seemed like it's like sort of like if you read the directions off of like a how-to and then you got angry at the how-to directions.
It's like it's like the IKEA instructions
exactly.
Only in Japanese. And you don't understand what there is.
Right.
Or like your math is weird and they didn't their numbers are different or I don't know.
Well, so
it had to be a numbers thing. They had to get the numbers wrong somewhere for them to blow themselves up.
Well, it's like anything. If you're not really ready for it, I mean, I guess you're going to make mistakes. And they caused this issue not so much through nuclear war, but it was from antimatter. Right.
Antimatter radiation. So, I wonder if that's really a thing.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but we have a whole thing where Joe Carey, Neelix, and Tom Paris are all captured by these mutants from the leftovers of the
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, exactly. I actually I think it's the second Planet of the Apes movie where they worship the nuclear missile.
They worship the Alpha and the Omega.
Yeah, I mean, that's but that's what it reminded me of. Anyways, so.
Yeah, it is like that, except they don't wear regular faces over top of their mutant faces.
Yeah, exactly. So this is they take them hostage. And they want them to basically
to relocate them to another world.
Another world, exactly.
Because Janeway was so ready to do that for those other people, but oh wait, now these people are mutants. We can't. We've got.
How long did they say it was going to take for them to do that? It was like a ridiculous.
I think it was like 3 years. I think it was like a 9 month trip back and forth. And they say it'd take a whole bunch of trips. I think they said it would be 3 years to relocate them.
So, I mean, it's sort of you can see why Janeway feels bad because.
Sure.
Because it's like, yes, humans sort of caused the demise of your civilization, but it's not really your fault. You didn't do it. This is them doing. Like I said, when you get those directions and you put something together wrong, is it really that person's the company's fault, or is it because you didn't follow the directions properly, or you couldn't handle using that product? So
yeah, I'd say it's not the manufacturer's fault necessarily. I mean, then again, they didn't also provide any of the materials. So maybe their materials weren't refined. I mean, they gave them it's all schematics, right? So, I mean, you go to IKEA and you get like all the tools and all the pieces. All they gave you was the instructions and you're making it with your own technology. So maybe their iron smelting or, their refining process wasn't up to snuff to contain things. You know what I mean?
Right. So. But this race is obviously,
bitter.
Bitter is a good word. Very bitter. bitter about their situation, which is somewhat understandable.
Yeah. It's horrible. And a lot of their children are stillborn because of the radiation and it's all sort of.
Yeah, exactly. So, Janeway will not relocate them because that's just going to take too goddamn long. And these people seem like assholes. So she's like, fuck that. And, this is not the first time Janeway's got requests to relocate people. And, like we said, Dragon's Teeth, she seemed all right with that. And also in Alliances, she seemed all right with it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know, this is just inconsistency in writing.
Oh, you know, the excuse is that it'll just take too long. Oh, it'll take too long to get home. So we're not going to add 3 years. We're never going to do it. Like, Janeway, you've already added 3 years for all the other things you've stopped at. So, I mean, why?
All the bullshit,
why draw the line here?
Janeway. Let's scan this nebula.
There's coffee
in it. There's coffee in that nebula. Yeah, so this is a big yes. It has nothing to do with Friendship One. It has more to do with their interactions with them. They should have just, took an assault team, get their crew members off, and then just fly away. It's like, oh, too bad. So sad for you.
Yeah, but they decided to do
a prime directive, bitches.
Prime directive! So they they did a Kirk where they had captured one of the guys because he got knocked out when they were trying to take on Chakotay. Don't mess with an Indian.
That's right. He'll take you out.
I'm far away from the boners of my people. I get restless when I'm far away from them.
That's right.
So
bigger boners.
Yeah. So he takes them out. They takes them back to the ship. They fix them, and luckily he's the scientist guy.
And, yeah. So he's a little more reasonable.
He's reasonable, and he's like, "Oh, I've got a way of like fixing the thing." So they agree to help. Well, they agree to help because you know they want to get the hostages back without getting them killed. Although the obligatory random crew member for the episode dies.
Well, he's in a couple episodes, so he's sort of like a minor C character.
Yeah, because I think the first time he popped up was Relativity.
Yeah, so he was around, so you were like, this guy's kind of cool.
And then
this guy's kind of cool.
And then they killed him, so he's slightly better than a red shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a gold shirt, but he's in a couple episodes. So, So they fix their torpedoes, and they try to blow up the atmosphere, blow away all the bad stuff with more radiation. Yeah. Fight radiation with radiation. So they blow it up, and the guy tries to shoot one of the missiles at him, but the wife is like, "No, I'm going to point a gun at you. They fixed my baby. They're trying to help us. Don't leave them alone." And so they fix
the... Honestly, the Voyager crew were like really nice people, and these people were just giant assholes. And like we said, there's reasons, but still.
Granted, it's still a break, and it's a classic TOS break because humans before did something that messed up the planet, and that they're trying to fix it, like the computers, let's destroy the computers. So it's very a TOS-y break of the Prime Directive.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Good point. Yeah, so this is a big yes. And we are down to our final episode here, Endgame.
Endgame.
Part 1 and 2. This is, again, I said this is a no. This is a temporal Prime Directive break. Do you feel the same way? I mean, I know that...
they do fuck around with the Borg some more.
That's what I was going to say. They mess with the Borg.
But the thing is, like, the Borg Prime Directive breaks don't really... I mean, the only other Prime Directive break for the Borg we have on here is Scorpion.
Right.
So all the other interferences with the Borgs don't count, so... But, they do like messing around with the Queen and stuff, so... But...
Yeah. I still say this is a no. I mean, it's Janeway... Janeway breaks the temporal Prime Directive.
Don't they destroy the Borg conduits behind them?
They'll just rebuild it.
Yeah.
They're just busy little beavers building all the time, trying to take over the universe.
It's true. I mean, they will rebuild them. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, something that impacts a culture, I mean, that would impact the Borg culture, I suppose, technically.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be technically, like, blowing up, like, a D7 or Bird of Prey for Klingons? It's like, yeah, it's their equipment, it's their work, but it's not going to alter their civilization.
Well, I mean, it's like the Omega particle. You mess up the Omega particle, like they travel transwarply with these conduits. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, who? I mean, it's the Borg. They're bad guys. It doesn't matter.
Right?
So, yeah, we can just call this a temporal one. I'm okay with that.
So that brings the conclusion of all of our Prime Directive mentions that we could find. For all the Star Trek episodes. Now, Dave, I see on our spreadsheet here, you put a tally of breaks and mixes.
Breaks and mixes. Although I need to rejigger this because we didn't count Scorpion as two separate episodes, and like we did.
Well, you can count them as one. I think we should count the double episodes as one, unless there was something separate in each one. But
it's just on here. You've got Equinox, but separate episodes.
Oh, one and two. Okay, yeah. So
it's the only time where that happens.
Yeah, so we can just count Equinox 1 and 2 as a yes.
Okay, so we'll go from the least breaks to the most breaks.
Right. So least breaks, what do you got?
We've got Deep Space 9 with a total of 5 breaks and two mixed, two things that we decided were mixed.
Right, exactly. So Deep Space Nine, a very long-running show. The Prime Directive is in full swing at this point. you got to hand it to Cisco and crew. They don't break it too often.
Absolutely.
Only when it counts. Only when it counts.
Staying on a space station keeps your nose clean.
I guess so. Keeps you away from making those crazy choices.
All right.
Next one we have.
We've got TOS. I mean, like...
Shocking.
It depends on how you want to rate them. If you want to like do a combined mixes and breaks, TNG would be next.
Okay. Okay.
So it's kind of like a tie. So TNG would be next if you do a combined misses and breaks. Because there's 9 TNG breaks and 1 where we decided was mixed, and okay. TOS has 6 breaks and 6 mixes.
Yeah, and again, TOS is a little fuzzy because there's a lot of weird shit going on, you know.
But total
directive is, yeah, total is 6 breaks and
6 mix.
6 mix. So that makes 12.
12-ish. So it depends on how you want to look at it. If we're only going full breaks or partial breaks. So TNG and TOS could be swapped depending on you, the listener. What do you think is more important, full breaks and misses, or just the full breaks?
Right.
Because TNG only had 1 that we decided was a mix, so that's a...
And to think about it, TOS only has 3 seasons, so...
Yeah, so TOS would have had the most breaks if it had gone on 7 seasons.
Yeah, at this rate, they'd be breaking it all the time.
Yeah, if they kept on at this rate, they would probably be around.
Captain, this Stone Age society just discovered fire. Give them a phaser.
They'd be like 15 breaks and like 15 mixed if they kept going at this rate.
Right.
It'd be interesting. And then with the grand master total, I'm going to say Voyager is at 10 breaks, since I got to subtract 1 because I counted Equinox.
Equinox, right.
10 breaks. So 10 breaks, and then it's got two mix and 3 temporal prime directives. So
right. So
breaks and mix, that's 12 and 15 if you include the temporal prime directive.
Right. So Voyager definitely, as we did say, Voyager has some flagrant breaks. I mean, we see a little bit in Next Gen, and we see a little bit in TOS, but yeah, Voyager, there's just right. She's just like, doesn't even consider it at some points.
But out of 25 episodes that were listed on the Memory Alpha, actually one of them wasn't. We added Threshold because we know that's a break. So out of all those episodes, you know, surprising number of them we decided weren't breaks, which was interesting because I was expecting Voyager's tally to be a lot higher.
There might be more. Maybe there's some that we've kind of missed. I mean, we're going off Memory Alpha.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we'll point them out later on if we run across them.
Yes, this I firmly believe that this will be a working document. This Excel sheet that we have going on here. So.
Oh yeah. So maybe in another year we'll have a new tally.
Right. and we haven't even really considered Discovery. Pretty much just because it's kind of its infancy. So we don't know.
I mean. How many times would you think Discovery broke the Prime Directive?
Well, Discovery came to the Crystal Planet with a crystal stalk, and you mess with those people, which they probably shouldn't have. And secondly, in the pilot episode, we see them going down and blowing up a well so they can get water for their
bug people. Bug people.
Those would be two.
That's a very TOS. That's a very Kirk violation, though. Helping poor people.
Not necessarily evil, just kind of like, you know, trying to do what's helping people, but, you know, you're kind of interfering with the society. And then the very last where, you know, is it
Kronos?
Yeah, they try to blow up Kronos. So, I mean, that's definitely pretty shitty.
And they did the Mirror Universe stuff. But, I mean, like, that's making the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah, that's just trying to escape from, like... Stranger in Strange Land kind of thing.
So maybe 3 with them.
Maybe 3. Yeah. Yeah. But you know,
but the thing is with Lorca, you know, he was basically in his own Omega directive. Like anything he said goes.
Right. So, and like, if he broke the rules, didn't matter.
It doesn't matter. His directive is to win the war. So that's why I kind of said earlier, like an episode or two ago, like Discovery kind of doesn't count because they're working at a level that where they exclude the Prime Directive.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, not next Dave, season though, hopefully.
Yeah. So here we are. We're at the end of our Prime Directive.
Prime Directive.
What do you feel after this long look back on all these different episodes and all these breaks? And
this is the fastest we've covered so many episodes in a long time. Like Robots Gone Wild was, our Klingon four-parter was probably one of the other times that we just went through like so many episodes in such a short amount of time. It's interesting, and it's hard to, you know, it's just it's fun. It was fun. It was interesting. It was just a good idea. Thank you, Andrew Dumais, for suggesting we talk about the Prime Directive. And thank you all for listening to these episodes. We hope we haven't bored you to tears with these breakneck speeds of just like episode. How about you, Aaron? How do you feel after five whole episodes on the Prime Directive?
I feel I understand the Prime Directive a lot more. I also feel that I think the Prime Directive is a little silly. I think when we talked about the part one episode that we kind of talked about that my philosophy is that if Voyager, you know, the Enterprise, Deep Space Nine crew, if they come in contact with people, you are part of the natural civilization and how things are to be. So it's kind of silly to think that you just being there, you know, isn't going to impact them. You know, even if you step on their planet and shift the soil with your soles of your feet, you're kind of changing things a little bit. So,
yeah, I agree. The Prime Directive is a little silly. It's definitely pretentious because, as we've said earlier in other episodes, that, you know, the opening monologue is seek out new life and new civilizations. But there's no except in that monologue. And then the show.
Except if you're Stone Age.
And the show puts all these exceptions on it. And, you know, it'll be interesting if they start, you know, looking at the Prime Directive in Discovery and maybe fleshing it out a little bit. Although it's not the right era to flesh out the Prime Directive because it's the cowboy diplomacy days. So I don't think we'll get that. And the little tidbits I have been reading about Discovery season two, it's supposed to get into like spirituality, I think, in season two. I think they're saying like, they want to challenge Michael's like scientism with, more like a belief system of some sort. So, I mean, that's just a little bit of rumors I've been reading. So, it'll be interesting to see how and where that goes.
Right. Yes, it has been interesting to list all these episodes, go through them all, think about them, and kind of like mull over what is a break.
And debate them. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, debate if something is. I mean, there's a couple times that I think we've both gone back and forth of what we thought of what's a break, what's not a break, and what was intentional or non-intentional. And does unintentional still mean a break of the Prime Directive?
I mean, so. By the letter of the law, yes, probably, but.
Right. Well, we all agree that there's murder and then there's manslaughter. So, I mean, there's unintentional murder and then there's intentional murder.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the law definitely sees that these are things that can happen. And I could see the same thing. You could definitely break the Prime Directive accidentally by not even knowing you're going to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but absolutely. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's been a blast going through this, and it'll be interesting going back to just a singular episode probably next week. We're working on hopefully getting a guest on.
Mm-hmm. It won't just be us two.
Hopefully we'll have a guest next time.
Us two assholes talking.
We gotta get a third asshole. That way, it's
okay. That's right. Andorian assholes, three assholes.
Ooh,
I don't know. Andorians don't have three assholes. I just made that up.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Aaron. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great time.
All right, and thank you all for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. And join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/syntholics. And go check out our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/syntholics.
Absolutely. And if you have the chance, please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Give us 5 stars if you like us and say something nice. Say, hey, man, their Prime Directive lookbacks have been phenomenal. This is education that you can't find. You know, one of the reasons, too, we wanted to do the Prime Directive is because there wasn't a lot out there about who broke the Prime Directive as much. I mean, everyone bags on Kirk a lot, but... you know, Janeway's got a lot of blood on her hand.
She does have a lot of blood on her hands.
Also, if you have a chance, please go to Patreon.com/Cinceaholics if you can donate some money to help us keep this podcast going. $1 a month. It's not much to ask for. Help us keep grease the wheels of the old podcast machinery that's constantly cranking in the background when no one's paying attention. And if you have a chance, please tell a friend about our podcast. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to support our show. If you know friends that are into Star Trek or into sci-fi or just stupid nonsense Prime Directive rules that don't really exist but only in our own imaginations and on TV and movies, let them know about Cinceaholics.
Let them know door to door. Anything will help. Word of mouth is a great thing. That's how I listen to probably half the podcasts I listen to. Aaron's recommended some great ones to me. So, you know, it's just how the podcasting thing goes. So,
absolutely. Break your own Prime Directive. Let somebody know about us. Don't keep us a secret.
We're not your dirty secret, even though we are sometimes dirty.
Well, onward to our next break of Prime Directives or whatever else we decide to break. Diaphragms or whatever else.
Ooh, oh my.
Kind of bricks.
Uh-oh, that's what you call an accident.
Ooh, I broke my Prime Directive, Captain.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you.
Go to sick bay.
Sick bay. Got to get that checked out. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Have a great week and live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.